And now we're talking about leadership training. We talk about the image of Rally, and I think we have to work very, 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 very hard to lift the image of Rally. When something starts off new, everyone's enthusiastic. We're now into the third, fourth generation in many, many cases, and some people have lost the vision, they've lost the verve, the dynamic. So many, many things have lost, and there's always the danger of just grinding on, doing it the same old way with no imagination and no flair. Now we're talking about leadership training, and this is not the idea of leadership training, where you take a whole lot of people different, shove them through some sort of training procedure, and they all come out the same. One of the things that we need to appreciate in the basics needed for training is to appreciate everybody's difference and the fact that people are different and their incompatibility is a tremendous value, and to use that to good effect. All right, thinking now about the needs. Imagine that you're inviting somebody to become a Rally leader. And I honestly believe it's a good idea to get the elders to do that. And we'll say a little bit about that tonight. But just for the sake of repeating myself, we would not do it as elders outside the church. We would do one of two things. Either two of us would visit the proposed Rally leader or Sunday school teacher or whoever we're after in their home, or we would invite them to our elders meeting. We have an elders meeting every Monday night, and it's always an open elders meeting. Anyone can come. Now, that we like to know if they're coming, so that we can plan our agenda, but it's open to anybody, men or women, may come. The leader of the ladies group is very welcome to come. Some sister has a particular problem. A mother has a difficulty. It doesn't matter. The elders meeting is always open. People don't have to tell us, but we're grateful if they let us know. And certainly with Rally, we often have the whole Rally leaders in. All the Rally leaders come. And we meet at usually 7:30 with a brief devotion and the general business that you have, you know, correspondence, that sort of stuff, minutes. And that's usually over very, very quickly because we've got a very marvelous deacon's body and they do most of the work. We just look there and sit there and look intelligent. But then we would say at 8 o'clock, the Rally leaders are coming. And it wouldn't just be the Rally leader. It would be all the Rally leaders would come. The whole lot. And we would meet with them and listen to their problems and their difficulties and their joys and their successes. Try to make suggestions because many of us have been Rally leaders ourselves. We have been there. But we do want the Rally people to know that we know. Now, I'm going to repeat this again tonight because I honestly believe it's something that elders who are very marvelous people, and you'll never hear me criticize elders. It's a thankless task. But often they are not aware of the gain they would have if they would open their door to Rally workers. So when we're thinking of getting somebody, often it needs to be a Christian. And I've asked a question here, which I'd be interested in a comment or two when you've thought it through. They need to be known to be a Christian. I don't think a Rally leader is the job for somebody who's a bit of an idiot in the church. I'll give him a job and he'll be good. You're putting somebody in a very, very dangerous position. We've just talked about insurance, and you have to have insurance today. We're fortunate in New Zealand. We have a sort of a government thing that covers all accidents. It's called accident compensation. So it doesn't matter whether you fall off your bike, get injured playing rugby, or hurt in a Rally floor or at camp. Accident compensation covers everybody's injuries, but you're still liable if you, for instance, put a small kid on a dirty great big stallion of a horse and the child came off. You could be sued for negligence, and I guess that's involved in your policy as well. So when you take a person on, it's not somebody that's a thick idiot, that has no sense of commitment or discipline and will do as, in other words, they won't respond to leadership. Just somebody wants to yell and stomp and shout. But then the question I've asked a lot of people, I believe that a Rally leader is a deacon or a deaconess. and I'll spend a bit more time on this tonight, but you're serving in the church. And the seven who were chosen to look after, I mean, all they were doing was handing out food to a whole bunch of widows, Greeks and Jewish widows, who couldn't get on. And so they chose seven Greek men in the church to hand out food. Now, I would imagine, being a very simple person, that it takes an awful lot more commitment and skill and imagination to run a rally for a whole year with everything that's involved in preaching and badges and counseling and all the rest of it than it does to hand food out to widows. And I would suggest that anybody who is involved in any branch of service in the church is a deacon or a deaconess. Now, they don't meet with the deacons. I don't agree with that anyway, but that's me. And I'm not talking about that. We might mention that tonight if others do come. But if they are a deacon and a deaconess, if a rally leader or a Sunday school teacher is serving in the church in a specific task, then I would believe the Bible would recognize them as a deacon or deaconess. If that is the case, if I'm right, or if the Bible's right, now I'm being cynical, if the Bible's right, then that person has got to have some sense of responsibility and some evidence of growth. Now, obviously, a junior leader hasn't got much, but they've got to have some sense of responsibility there. All right. I believe that this person needs to be, and our training needs to teach them to have a personal quiet time, some kind of ongoing Bible study. We encourage this in our rally leaders. I don't have a lot to do with that. I help and I speak at the rally and I'm involved in rally work in New Zealand and so on. But at Totara Springs, where I'm much more involved, and that really takes my time, for cadet leaders, that's somebody that's between the age of 16 and 18, if they were coming, say, to May camps that we're moving into now, they must do an Emmaus course, some particular Emmaus course. Not that, you know, like understanding people, but maybe friends Jesus met or something like that, depending on the age and maturity of the person. And then when they want to come back in August, they must have done another Emmaus Bible study. That's just part of it. That marvelous book, and if I was a rally leader, and being an elder, I'm trying to insist on this in our church, but, you know, people say, oh, Malcolm, you know, Bert, Malcolm, we're all busy. But it's compulsory reading for all our staff is that fabulous Emmaus book, Understanding People. And if I were a Sunday school director again, and I have been for many years, but if I was again, and if I was a rally leader, I would try to insist that everybody worked through that book and did the lessons on understanding people. I plowed through books on child psychology and adult psychology. You can't see wood for trees. That book gets to the point immediately, quickly, and spiritually. And that's a very excellent book. And certainly anybody in a leadership position, just work. Do the questions, because the questions mean that you work a little bit harder. Oh yeah, I know that, I know. In everything I'm saying to you today, nothing will be new. It's all, you know, pretty common sort of stuff. You know, I mean, I'm just a barrow after all. But it's the fact of putting into practice. I mean, we all know that our church rate should be good. We all know that our image should be good. We all know that it's doing it. And I believe we have to encourage our junior leaders to have some kind of personal study. What we did with Sunday school, and I haven't got it into our rally, because quite frankly at MetaMeta, our rallies were almost extinct, almost prehistoric. And we've got them ticking over again now, and they're going very, very well. The girls' rally was holding its own, but the boys' rally was down to just a handful. And just slipping through my mind now is the reason why. Don't let the minority create the atmosphere. Remember that. And that's what they did, and they let the scruffy minority create the atmosphere so nice kids wouldn't come and the rally went to the wall. Well, now the rally is moving on again. But if I took a rally, a Sunday school teacher on, supposing I was after Sue. Is it? Right. And I was after Sue. Two elders would be, us two heavies, you see, would come along and either invite to the elders' meeting, which would be a nervous experience, or else we'd come along so that your mum and dad could hold your hand. And we would come to you and say, now, we would like you to be a rally Sunday school teacher, or in this case, a rally leader. We believe you could do it. We would have discussed it with your parents first, of course, just so that we knew they had their support. But we'd say, now, if you become a leader, these are the requirements. One, you attend rally every week. Two, you attend the leaders' meeting, which may be every month. That's a compulsory deal. That you wear a uniform. That you do some continuous Bible study as your schoolwork will allow. And we leave that to you and your parents to supervise that. And so we'd have certain things. You could think of the minimum that a rally leader should be doing. Because I've been very disappointed at camp, for instance. We have, and the spiritual stature of the leaders is lower than the stature of the kids, and they're not even Christians. I mean, some leaders are real idiots, and I wonder where their whole commitment to the Lord Jesus is. You know what, as Song Leader was saying, you know, the whole purpose is to bring people to Christ and glorify the Lord Jesus. The rest is just mechanics to get there. And an awful lot of kids, or leaders, I'm sorry, join up in rally because it gives them a sense to yell and stomp and bully people around. They're not in it to serve the Lord. They're in it for an ego trip. And that's a very, very bad reason to be a rally leader. So I'd want to sort of talk about that and build that into the training. A sense of commitment, we've talked about that. Two other areas. Local area training courses that I believe need to be compulsory. Now that's a hard one. You have a training day, and usually it's the enthusiastic and the converted who come, and the assistant leaders and cadet leaders or whatever don't come. Now I think it needs to be compulsory, and this is very, 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 very difficult. When I say I've done this, it's not a boast, it's just that I know it worked. In Auckland some years ago, and this is going back quite a few years, when the rallies there were beginning to really tick, today it's a very sad scene. But when I lived in Auckland, we wanted to work these rally training days. And I believe the reason the rally movement is still as good as it is because of the initiative and the business-like way in which things are done, like your business session now. Now, this is going to offend you and upset you and make you sort of want to throw something. Well, don't. If I was moving into an area and there was just myself and my wife and a couple of Christian families and we were moving into a new area to start a work and I had the choice of either a Sunday school or a rally, I would plunk for a Sunday school. I still believe a Sunday school has got more to offer than a rally has in regard to work put in for results. The average Sunday school is abysmal. Absolutely. Yeah, is that kid going to survive? Sorry, love. Yeah, we've all had them. You were one once. You know, never mind, you know. That's all right. You speak in tongues, these children at that age. And many Sunday schools that go to are abysmal. The reason is, it's a long time since we had Sunday school training sessions in, say, citywide. I run a few in New Zealand, and now I've got tough. I will only run a Sunday school training session if all the teachers are going to be there. That's got to be guaranteed. And at least three, if not half, the oversight are present. Because you get all the teachers all genned up and enthusiastic with new ideas. They go to the oversight, and they put a line through it. Not because the oversight's bad. But you didn't get their imagination too. Now, the rally movement's still doing this, but a lot of our training sessions are very poorly attended. So what we did with a lot of effort, we went around assemblies, and there were three of us really in the team, but mainly two of us. I was talking about preparing a talk and delivering a talk and counselling and that kind of thing. And the other guy was talking about, and I did a little bit of, I'm a hopeless at hobbies, absolutely hopeless. But we had a person, if it was, that came along to talk about ladies' hobbies and boys' hobbies, that was the third bot. And then another guy talked about games and gym. So we'd come here to, where are we at? Eastwood, is this? Yeah, Eastwood. We'd come to Eastwood, and if there was another assembly close by, they had to be close. Now I'm talking about 2 miles distant only. We would combine for a Saturday morning training day. Now, you'd only have boys and girls leaders. You might only have 20 leaders. But they'd all come to that. When you had the bigger one, you couldn't. And so we went 3 Saturdays here, three Saturdays Parramatta, three Saturdays somewhere else, Pennant Hills, three Saturdays, you know, Campbelltown, three Saturdays Rose Hill, and it was a lot of work, 8 o'clock till 12 o'clock. But by doing that, every Saturday morning we did it. But by doing that, all the leaders came, and we lifted the level of a training day. And I believe it's a part of a leader's commitment that when they become a rally leader, training days are understood to be compulsory. If they don't attend, how do you teach them? How do you train them? Now, there's the problem of rugby and all these other things that take place. And that's where commitment is concerned. You see, I was a Sunday school director once in a Sunday school. I took it over with 25 kids. This is not a boast. Please don't think that. There were 25 children. The assembly said, Malcolm, we'd like you to look after this Sunday school. You will never make it grow because the area is grown up. They're just the believers' children. Within a very, very short time, we had that Sunday school to over 170. And it was very simple. It's not difficult to get kids to come to an organization. That is not the problem. The problem is to get leaders to do the job. God never has a problem with Nineveh. He always has a problem with Jonah. It's always his difficulty. Now, what happened was, in our first leaders meeting, with teachers meeting we had a lot of fuss, and I haven't got time to talk about that. The Baptist, their church was booming. And one leader who eventually, fortunately, resigned, which was an answer to a tremendous amount of prayer on my part, said, oh, let's face it, he said, because we went through the roll books, being 25 kids, I had six teachers and 25 kids, you know, two kids each. And he said, I said, oh, can I have a look at your roll book, please? And I said, oh, I see you've got a lot of kids missing, you know, about 10 kids in the roll. And a lot of, he said, oh, let's face it, they've gone to the Baptist. I mean, they're better off down there, aren't they? Now, I don't believe in keeping vendettas in your back pocket where I'm going to get my own back one day for what you say. I don't believe in that. But on this case, I allowed myself the liberty. I thought, that will keep, see. And at the end of the meeting, I said, well, now let's plan our next leaders' meeting next month, same time, same place. And this guy, I knew he would, I mean, I knew the guy. Oh, come on, we can't do that. I mean, after all, I mean, we're not going to do that. I said, do you know why the Baptists are better than us? Because they have a teachers' meeting every week. Oh, I was enjoying this. Every week. And if you miss two in a row, and then the third one in a row, without a legitimate reason, you lose the job. You're fired. That's why they're better. Now, what's the date of the next meeting? And this guy said, Malcolm, are you serious? We're going to have a meeting every month. And I said, yes, I'm serious. Well, I'm resigning. And he resigned. That was beautiful. That guy was a pain in the neck. I mean, he wasn't committed. I mean, I know the man. I know what he was doing. His class, he had two kids. We had a rule that if a kid was away, you put a little mark. And then you had to put the date you visited the kid that week. He wouldn't do that. And that's why he left and a lot of others left. One other issue, just to talk about that I'm not a nice guy. I'm not nice. I'm not nice. One girl said, oh, Malcolm, if you're going to have a leaders meeting every month, I have table tennis on that night. I can't come. Well, that was a reasonable excuse to let God down. I mean, that little white ball's important. I mean, she wasn't going to make the Olympics or anything. She was just a little table tennis club. Well, you know, we really did try to it, and I believe you've got to try. You can't be stubborn and silly and say, oh, well, you just got to give your rugby. I've got to give this up. You've got to think of a date that's going to suit people. And we tried to change our leaders' meeting. We put on a Sunday afternoon. It upset more. And we came back to this Monday night, and she was the only one. And I said, well, love, there it is. We've tried. We've tried for the last 3 months to change it, and it doesn't suit. And we're back to Monday, dear. Now, what's I just won't come to the teachers' meeting. I said, in that case, dear, you have to resign your class. You're joking. I said, I'm not joking. If this job of teaching kids is more important than your table tennis, then you're not good enough to be a teacher here. Well, she slammed down a book and walked out. She was a spiritual girl. And a father rang up. Who do you think you are? God. And he was threatening to leave the church. That's why that Sunday school only had 25 kids. Because that was the level of the dedication. A table tennis ball came before the kids. This guy's rotary came before this. Well, he wasn't rotary actually, but I mean, he would have done. He didn't have anything on a Monday night. He just wanted to sit home and watch television. We eventually got a tremendous army of dedicated people. All of them happened to be, this is no reflection on you very wonderful senior people, and I'm not being sarcastic. All of them under the age of 25. And they worked, and they sweated, and they used their imagination, and it just took off. And if we do not demand in our leadership training, and in our commissioning leaders to work with us, some level of commitment, then we are never going to get anywhere. And I believe in it, when we co-opt somebody to help in the rally, these are the minimum requirements. And I'm sorry, but that's the deal. You'll say, Malcolm, you will never get leaders. I've now been a full-time worker and involved in this kind of thing for over 25 years. And as a testimony before God, I have never lacked leaders. Never. Never. There's always dedicated people there if they believe you're serious. But if you're not serious, the dedicated people will go somewhere else. And I believe in their commitment, that's the line. So that's what I would suggest in that. I've lost my glasses. Pathetic things. Some of the other things that I will talk about here very quickly is your regular leaders' meetings. I've just talked about the church that was at. I've given away the place where it was. I put it there so I'd remember it and didn't think it would show up. All right, we had a teacher's meeting, or a rally, when I ran a rally there. It wasn't that, I'm getting myself, it's all right, the name is safe. I ran a rally that I took over. I also inherited a rally. And they were bad. The leader virtually had a nervous breakdown. I was just a kid of 18 at the time. I started when I was 17. I was now 18. And the kids were on the roof and everywhere. And absolute shambles. It's Takapuna. You're trying to pronounce the word, you know. It was this rally I inherited. And the elder said, "Well, Malcolm, you're the only one. You'll have to do it." And I had all these kids. They were tough, rebellious. We had outside a little tree, had little nuts on it, and they used to throw them at the windows of the house next door. He was always moaning. Well, I wonder what I was going to do, and I turned up all on my own, you know, John Wayne, you know, all on his own. And I looked at these kids. It took me ages to get them in. Eventually I got them in. I had one young guy helping me. I co-opted to come along. And I eventually, rally started about 6:30. About 8:00, I eventually had them all inside, the door shut, and sitting down. See, got them in eventually. It was hopeless. And I fired the lot. Everybody was put out of rally. They all got a registration slip that they need to sign this if they're going to come back. They didn't think I was serious, but I was. Right, rally's over. We're not praying, we're not doing anything. You're all expelled, and if you want to start again, you fill this in, your parent fills in. Well, the elders got hold of me and said, "We put you in that job to start a rally, not ruin it. And you've ruined it. They won't come back." They didn't come back. Four came back. But we finished that rally that year with 50 people, 50 kids. Now, it was just on my own, actually. And that's why I put that, because what I did, it was really a glorified games thing with a parade thrown in and a red-hot gospel message. But what I did here, I had a leaders' meeting on a Saturday morning. And I had, you know how you have your group leader, your group seconds? Well, I had group thirds. We sat around the table. I was the chairman, and it was very, very efficient. I learned a tremendous amount from kids. But we had a one-hour training session fitted into that. And in your leaders' meetings that you have, I would suggest you have a one-hour training session, maybe involving a non-rally person. There are lots of people in the rally that have got skills about counselling, giving a talk, preparing a talk, knocking on a door, visiting a home. Ethics, keeping your mouth shut, keeping a confidence. And you can just fit that into your monthly rally leaders meeting. You might say, "Oh, I'm sorry, but only 3/4 of an hour, half an hour." And the person just comes along and gives you a little special training slot that you want to fit in to rally. Now, if the person's worth their salt, they will travel across Sydney to do that. They don't mind. People with skills don't mind how few they're talking to if they believe the people are serious. And one of the things we've always done is to fit that in, as I've suggested. All right, some of the qualities that they need is a love for children and friendship leadership. What I mean by that is, at Totra Springs, where you have a leader and you've got 5 children or 10 children, if I came to any child in camp and said to that child, who is your best friend? That child should be able to say, my best friend is my leader. Now that's leadership, that's loving leadership. My best friend, and time and time and time again, I'll go to a kid and say, who's your best friend at camp? And the kid will say, my leader. Now you can yell and stomp and scream, and we've talked about discipline, and somebody didn't believe me at Emmaus, but some of you are senior, and I am about to embarrass you, all of you. It's good to see you, brother. I am going to get you in just 2 seconds flat, standing on these seats. You're all going to do it. And you'll stand on the seat on one leg, like that, holding your nose and holding your ear. You're all going to do it. Everybody will do it. You don't want to do it. And you're going to be embarrassed, but you're all going to be there, you see, because what I've got down here is a machine gun. And this row here of people in the front, these 4 won't do it, so I'll shoot them. You'd be up. Wouldn't you? You know, you'd be up there as quick as a wink if I shot them. That's not leadership. That's bullying people. Shut up and sit down. I'll come and thump you. Knock your plumbing head off if you don't shut up. That's not leadership. One more crack out of you, son, and you're out. That's not leadership. That's because I'm bigger than you. You will do as you're told. That's not leadership. That's not Christian leadership. That's the machine gun attitude. But there's a big difference in loving leadership. And there's a mighty big difference in a leader who leads with love or a leader who leads with yelling and disciplining. I go to some rallies and the best thing they could do with a whistle is swallow the thing. They blow it, blow it, blow it, blow it. I've blown the whistle 6,000 years! And the poor leader needs to learn discipline. And they just haven't learned to look after themselves. And kids need to learn friendship leadership. And there's a lot to it, and I'm just telling you what I think is needed. My job was, what's needed in training. I'm not telling you what it is, I'm telling you what's needed, I think. Discipline skills. Not bullying children, but teaching a child to do the right thing because they believe it's the right thing to do. Now, when I said this at a ladies' country women's institute where they're all non-Christians, one lady stood up, rubbish! It is possible. You do this in your homes. Our home is not perfect. I mean, I help breed the kids, so they haven't got much chance. And you look at your own kids and think, oh, grief, that's just me coming out, a poor kid, you know. And that's one of the bad things of having children. You see your worst self coming out in your kids. But we've had a few laws in our house, rules. The rules were that nobody leaves their bedroom in the morning unless the bed is made and the room is tidy. That's a law. Do you know, our kids have done that since they were 4 years of age. On Friday morning, I change all the beds in our house. It's my job. I'm a full-time worker. Nothing else to do, see? And they get up, they strip their beds because they were small. To now, they make their own beds. I mean, they're big enough and ugly enough to look after their own beds. The youngest one's 13. They can make their own beds. So every Friday morning, the beds are changed. And I'll just go and say, hey, you kids, there's a tractor on the floor here. Shoes on the floor there. Mess over there. Look at your desk. You're not going to school. But Dad, sorry, if you missed the bus, you will ride to school on your bike. Tidy up your room. Now, the amazing thing is, eventually, kids will do the right thing because you've taught them it's the right thing to do. Funny thing happened the other day. I zipped in because I did want to see the Sydney Opera House. I don't feel I've been to Sydney to see the Opera House. And I was at a station, and I met some people, and they talked to me, and I really didn't sort of get to the Opera House. But anyway, it was funny. I found myself doing it. Somebody had dropped a chip bag. You know these stations? And your station is very clean, and there's a little guy there. And somebody had dropped a chip bag. And I found myself bent down, pick it up, and put it in the rubbish. And the guy looked around at me, you know. But don't you do that? You know, at camp, I've always got my wife says, if only you'd empty your pocket, I don't mind you picking up lollipops, only empty them before you put them in the washing machine.
But I do it automatically. My hand just goes down and picks up rubbish. You know, you'll leave it out there and you Google that. But what I'm meaning is, you can keep your rally hall tidy if they believe that's essential. If you yell at them all the time, well, they're not going to ever learn to do the right thing. See, discipline is teaching a person to do the right thing, not because they've got a guilty conscience. See, I've said it that often, the people that have been listening to me, and there's been a few, you know, they've been very gracious. And I've said it that often, they think that's the only blow that guy plays. But anybody in this chapel this morning, this afternoon, that hasn't had a quiet time today, I believe you're a backslider. Period. You were dumb enough to get up this morning and not read the scriptures and pray. You thought you'd get through the day without Jesus? That's thick. Now, there's two reasons a person has a quiet time. One, because you've got a guilty conscience and feel you've got to sort of switch God in. Or two, because you believe it's the right thing to do. And there's a big difference. And we have to train people to do the right thing because they believe it's the right thing to do. Wearing their uniform is the right thing to do. Being on time is the right thing to do. Being reliable is the right thing to do. Being punctual, being kind, being gracious, friendship, leadership is important. Giving your lives to people is important. Not because it goes with the badge, but because in your training you've taught them that's what Christ would want you to do. Now that's not easy to get there, but when you get there, you've got a good leader. And there are some leaders at Totes Springs I would never have back. But there are those that come back year after year after year after year. When I see their foil, oh thank goodness, you know, they've come. They're so committed. See, when you're a leader, take Philip over here for a minute. What's the next word down there? Ethics of youth work. Yeah, well, we don't need to talk about that. Take, for instance, Philip's a leader. How many leaders have you got under you? Five or six. What right has Philip got to say to those leaders, you were late. I expect you to be on time. Your uniform isn't very tidy. I want that cleaned up. It's a mess. All right? Your hobby wasn't ready. That's not good enough. This is the second week you haven't come prepared for your hobby. That talk was a shambles. The visual aid was abysmal. What right has he got? I mean, he'd do it nicer than that. I mean, he's a nice person. What right has he got to do that? What is the level of his leadership? What gives him the right, or what gives him, I don't like to use the word, I'm trying to dodge the word, what gives him the authority to tell his five leaders what to do? He doesn't pay them. They could say, here's your book, stuff it. The only right he has got to tell those leaders what to do is their level of commitment. The greater their level of commitment, the stronger his leadership is. The weaker their level of commitment, the weaker his leadership is. Am I communicating? You follow me there? So that if you've got weak leaders, they're uncommitted. His leadership, he's always saying, look, I'm awfully sorry, but would you mind and please, and I wonder if you'd be offended if I, instead of being able to say, hey, fella, your uniform's a shambles, man, come on. Oh, sorry, Phil. Yeah, look, I didn't put on a coat hanger. That's the way it would be, because he's committed. He's so committed, he is embarrassed that his leader would have to say something. I mean, the leader's got to earn the right, too. But so often, we are trying to lead uncommitted people. And if they're not committed, then your level of leadership is very, 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 very thin. And you're always having to do things yourself or beg people to do it or apologize. Look, I hate to ask you. But you've got to ask them. And they say, oh, I suppose I can do it. And they make you feel a real heel. I'd rather not ask those people. Well, I suppose I can. If there's no but, suppose. One day they'll stand before the Lord Jesus. They won't suppose then. They'll wish they'd have done 10 other things. But those people are hard to lead. And I would never want to surround myself with those kind of leaders. The key is always surround yourself with people better than you if you can. Now you can't, I mean, he's a senior leader, obviously he's a leader because he's better. That's why he's more mature, he's been there. But he's got people that have got potential that possibly is better potential. And the wonderful thing that I've discovered in my little job is this, that you pick a kid up who is 16 years of age, and I'm thinking at the moment of a guy like, say, Jeff Smith. And I picked him up when he wouldn't mind me saying this because he says it publicly. When he came to camp as a student, he didn't even believe in prayer. He didn't even believe in the sovereignty of God. And that guy was not very far on for God. Today, he caught up with me a long time ago, and you see him way ahead. And that's a thrill, isn't it? When you pick up some bit of a kid or a bit of a leader, and you nudge them and you demand the best, lovingly, kindly, loving leadership, not bullying, but they want to give you the best. Because they know you're genuine, you're sincere, you won't ask them to do any job you wouldn't do. And they begin to give their heart to the Lord Jesus. And you see them develop and catch you up and become maybe a preacher or an administrator or an elder. And they've left you behind. That's leadership. You pick somebody up and you push them on and they've got into the race and they've left you behind. But they needed you. And if it hadn't been for you, they wouldn't be where they are today, humanly speaking. So demand the best. And then the other thing we said there was, they need to understand ethics, physical contact. I love doing this. I'll pick on him because he's a friend of mine. I won't disturb his hair because his hair's nice. But see, that is assault. And a cup across the head, that's assault. I find as a youth leader very hard to smack my children is the hardest thing because I discipline myself ever since I was a kid. Never to strike a child. And you can't strike. They need to know that. I don't strike children at camp. I take them through the double doors without opening them. Keeping a confidence. Often little kids tell their leaders all sorts of things and a loyalty to the leader. The last one I just want to mention, I'll just zip down it because time has gone. It's this. Hang on. Still hot off the press. They need to be taught group control, and that's this chart here that I've done in a hurry. Group control, they need to be taught this, begins with you. I often say to people, I love saying it at Bible schools and colleges like this, how do you know if you're a disciplined person? Look at your bedroom. That's where you spend a lot of your time. If you're a dirty bedroom, and in a messy bedroom, probably a messy person. If you can live in that mess, then you've probably got a confused, undisciplined mind. So always look at a person's bedroom. You know, what's the bedroom like? Okay. The first person, whenever you're talking about discipline, the first person to discipline is you. If you're an undisciplined person, you will never discipline anybody else. Now, it's not the discipline of you stand up, you sit down, you come here, you shut up. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a discipline where things happen. Because you're organized. All right? Your personal discipline and efficiency. It follows on. A person that prays. Some leadership ability. Now, they may not be the leader, but they've got an ability to lead others. An ability to sit down and plan with you. You need to help them. Concentrate on the task in hand. I'd like to spend a lot of time on that. A love for people and the ability to delegate. All right, games is something else they need to be taught. And they need to be taught that when you're introducing a complex game, you introduce the game in competitive segments, not the whole game at once, but stage by stage. You've all done that in your training courses. Well, they need to do that. Control, participation. I go to a number of girls' rallies, but it never happens. It happens in boys' rallies. You know how boys play continuous cricket? You know where there's a boy there and there's a box and the ball is body's got to kick it and then he runs regardless of whether he hits it or not, you know, the sort of thing or whatever you call it here. Well, it's fun to watch because you always tell a leader, you see. There's a leader over there, there's a great big half house sort of guy. He says, oh, kids. And there's a guy there that is good. And he's been in there for about 4 or 5 minutes and he's got 20 runs. So he says, give me the ball, see. I'll get him out. Leader walks up, see, one of these leaders. And not much between the ears. And he gets the ball. Great big bloke and he bowls the ball. Whew, you see, down it goes. Takes the kid's leg off, box, wall, through the kitchen. Down it goes. See, okay, he got the kid out. But he doesn't say, okay, you carry on. He carries on bowling, and he bowls the rest of the team out. So I'll go in first, and he gets all the runs. End of game, end of fun, an idiot of a leader. That leader is only involved with those children for his own personal benefit and self-esteem. He is a very childish person. The only reason he's a leader is because he's able to dominate kids because he can't dominate anybody else. A dangerous person. And so kids need to be taught that kind of thing. Was that down? Understanding their development, I'll mention that in a second. Helping the preparation talk. What we do in our rallies, we like everyone, if they can, to take the talk. And, you know, you divide to provide. So when we had our rallies, as those I mentioned, with 70 kids, we had 7 leaders all took devotion. So you broke your rallies down to segments of 7. And that was your roll book. So you had just 10 kids on your roll. You took their little, we all did the same devotion. And we'd have a training evening and we'd go through what we're going to do. They would do the devotion. It's easier to speak to 10 little kids. One will be away, that's 9. Then speak 70. It's almost like a Billy Graham crusade with 70 naughty little kids. But the other thing was, that leader with the 10 kids, he became the pastor of that group. He did the visitation and so on. So you broke it down into modules. Counseling is important, and characteristics they should have. And nobody, you know, even Philip and I haven't got all these. All right, you know, even us. I mean, look at us, you know. But you've got these in mind. I'll get the chart out for this evening. But can I just show this to you? And I'm very happy. I'm not going to go through it, so don't panic. Don't go, oh, grief. You'll never shut up, that guy. It's a chart that I've developed. Where are we? I'll use this one here. That's the next age group up. Very happy to send it to you. It's not really mine. It's one I developed and have messed around with, and you may have seen it. But I believe every youth leader needs to work at this chart. I'll just go down this one very quickly, because it starts with preschoolers. It's the 10 to 12 year age group. I don't understand your grade, so I've done it. The 10 to 12, that's a consolidating growth. Now, you'll know some kid that's different. This is a generalization, all right? Physically, they're a rover, a lover of nature, boisterous and tough. You know, they're real macho men at 10 years of age, you know. They're ape heroes. You become their hero. Rally leaders become their hero. They want to be like you, dress like you, do their hair like you. Girls, they have pets, particularly girls at that age, you know, want a horse. Girls have got a problem with real jealousies there that grow up amongst girls more than boys at that stage. An investigator, now you'd have had to see the other ones, but how does it work? And particularly little boys, it's always taking things to bits. Nobody can get again, it's always taking things to bits. Often a great reader, and they'll collect anything. But the thing is, boys and girls are becoming investigatory. What does that mean to me? They respond to the group. That's why rallies are so successful at this age group. Because the organization, the gang, is the influence. Our class, our group, our rally, our this, our that. It's us. It breaks up over here. They're introspective and idealist. And so here they're an independent. And they have individual habits. They have individual heroes. And they're learning to have an individual sense of humor. And a lot of kids until then, you know, haven't developed a real sense of humor. I mean, to tell a joke and really... So in your devotional group, humor is a very real part there. And then a worshipper, and then ideas and opinions is instruction. Particularly that one is important. And what I would do is to go down with kids, and I do that with our leaders at camps, and I do it at various other places. It's a little black and white chart that I've got. I haven't got it with me. So I just did that. But it's to know what you're supposed to be doing with each kid. To give one last final illustration in conclusion, my last point, to sum up, that we may have something to eat. I hope they turned the zip on, because when I was up there getting coffee, it was only on medium. Worries me, I've got to look away. Take, for instance, a person working with teenagers. They may be 15-year-old. Now, a 15-year-old kid is a problem. They don't know where they're going or coming, whether they've been or where they should have been. They're vacillating. And the leader of that age group must never think they've won or lost. That age group begin to be again the government. Mum doesn't understand. Dad doesn't understand. Nobody understands. The leader doesn't understand. The teacher's thick. The headmaster's useless. Everything is wrong. Often. And they're very difficult. And in your youth work, they're a problem. The most important characteristic a leader of children has is consistency. To be consistent. To never give in.